Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you find it puzzling that more Christians don't believe in gun control. After all, wouldn't God, if he existed, be in favor of gun control? Well, my friend, God does exist, and the Bible does speak about control, but not gun control, self-control. Self-control is not being exhibited by our president, however. Here we go again with executive orders as far as gun control is concerned, and this time the orders come packaged with tears. Not everybody seems to accept the tears as real, however. Fox News host Andrea Tantaros is drawing much criticism with her insinuation that President Obama's tears during his press conference about a need for more gun control were fake. In a tongue-in-cheek manner, Tantaros suggested that the president used a raw onion to produce his tears. Now, she may have been joking about the onion, but her suggestion of manufactured emotion was genuine. Commenting on Obama's bold statement about new executive action to broaden background checks, the hosts of Fox's Outnumbered expressed concern about a president who is ignoring the separation of powers prescribed in the U.S. Constitution. During this discussion, co-host Melissa Francis got things rolling. She said this: "What was really upsetting was the tears that he wiped away again and again. You want that for, I mean, we feel frightened about what's going on with ISIS, and he can't pull the kind of passion for anything about this. I feel bad about those kids in Newton, Connecticut," she continued. "Your heart breaks for them, but it's only about this that he gets so upset about and never about terror." Well, then Tantaros weighed in, insisting the emotion seemed disingenuous because, if honest, he would have spoken out a long time ago. She said, "This is how many years? Almost 8 years. He's almost at the end of his term, and you haven't heard him go to Chicago and really speak about this issue. So I would check that podium for like a raw onion. It's not really believable. And the award goes to, we are in the awards season." Well, Robert Sobel of Blasting News called this a cheap shot at the president. He's only one of many to criticize the Fox panel. Okay, so where do I stand with this whole thing? It's simple, really. Tears for the death of children or the death of any victim are appropriate from a head of state. Manufactured tears for a photo op are another story altogether. We may never know the truth, apart from confiscating President Obama's teleprompter and seeing if his electronic script says, "Insert tears here." However, skepticism is warranted when we examine our president's pattern of behavior. For some reason, his waterworks malfunctioned after the attack on Benghazi. Hours after four Americans were murdered, Obama was campaigning in Nevada. But he did take action in the aftermath of the ISIS beheading of American journalist James Foley. He played a round of golf. True, the actions of his administration were more serious after two jihadists committed mass murder in San Bernardino. Attorney General Loretta Lynch gave a warning to any who would dare speak against Islam, promising prosecution should such speech lead to violence against Muslims. President Obama does seem to cherry-pick the events he's going to express the most concern over. By an amazing coincidence, events garnering the most tears or concerns also lead to new executive orders. Now, in all fairness, One cannot control when they choose to cry. Perhaps the previous droughts which invaded Obama's plumbing were caused by global warming, and now the latest ETA regulations rebooted his personal precipitation. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, co-hosting the show today. My good friend and pastor, Jim Barrier, calling all the way from San Antonio, Texas. Jim, welcome back to our program.
Hey, great to be with you again, Bob. And by the way, thanks for playing some of my favorite music there.
Hey, I've got to tell you, and I had a bet with Nick. Well, not really a bet, because Nick actually didn't bet against it. I said, my friend Jim is such a baby boomer. If he doesn't comment on some of this music, I'll eat my hat. So I didn't think you'd do it. I didn't think you'd do it this quickly, though. I thought we'd get you later on.
Well, I counted theme from Exodus, music from the movie Ben-Hur, the good one, and then just now some of the overture from Tommy.
Now that was actually, although we do use Ben-Hur on this program, what you heard already today was Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, you know what? And I heard that. And I thought, that's what I thought, but you're right.
But it's that biblical type music, although Lawrence of Arabia took place in the 20th century, but the music is very Middle Eastern, very biblical.
Yes, and Tommy, of course, is a story about a Messiah.
Yes. So there you go. And now we have two versions of Tommy on this show. We have the original by The Who, but what you heard was the Electric Horseman in their cover for Tommy, which actually I had heard first when I was in high school. So,
well, there have probably been three or four actual productions. There was the original disc, and then they did a release about a year later with a bunch of people like Eric Clapton and Elton John. And then they did a movie version, and then there was a stage show.
The stage show actually previewed here in La Jolla. I got to see the Broadway cast before they went to Broadway, and it was a phenomenal production, just phenomenal.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And John Entwistle, before he died, said, "What next, Tommy on Ice?"
Okay.
All right. Hey, good to hear you. It's good to be here with you, man.
Yeah, it's always great to have you, my friend.
Yeah.
So what's on your radar today?
Well, in your opening, it said, feel free to ask Bob a question, so I have to ask.
Okay.
Did you see The Force Awakens, and what was your review?
I did see it, and I know the last time you were on the show, I talked about what I feared they might do. I was partially right, but I'm very happy to admit that I was partially wrong. I thought there'd be some kind of problem with Han and Leia. I predicted that they'd be separated and there'd be problems with their kids. They were separated. They didn't have the kind of dorky problem with their kids that I was afraid of, though. Like, Dad, you never came to my basketball game. So it wasn't that bad. Overall, well, first of all, I'm glad that George Lucas didn't direct it, because I think he's the greatest liability to his own franchise. And I heard he didn't like it a whole lot, actually.
What a surprise.
But I think if he had directed it, we would have had that lame scene about the kid in the basketball games. Who knows?
Yeah, and everything would have been digital, and there'd have been very few human beings in it.
I did like it. I think a lot of the people that I've talked to loved it more than I did. Actually, next week, film critic Mark Boobian is going to be on our show, and I know he liked it, too. I won't give away. He's talked to me a little bit about it. I don't want to give that away to the audience, but I liked it.
Yeah.
I did not love it. It did look like we're being set up for a really interesting story in the next movie, though, just by the way this one ended. And what about you? How did you feel about it?
You know what? I really liked it. And I guess if we're not giving spoilers, I did predict, as soon as I heard about them signing the original cast, I predicted what did take place. And
oh, I think you can give a spoil. Anybody that's into Star Wars, if they haven't seen that movie by now, they're not going to see it. Harrison Ford.
Harrison would only agree to do it if they kill him off because he didn't want to do the third one originally. And so
yes, he wanted them to kill him off in Jedi, which may have made Jedi a better movie, frankly. They reduced Han Solo and Lando Calrissian to cartoon characters in that movie.
Well, George was always first about the cash. And I predicted that Han Solo would die in this film, and it was okay with me that he did. And I think the new characters, I really like the new characters.
The three young characters were very good. They were very good. The girl was good. It's they're interesting. I mean, it certainly has a lot of potential. And like I said, I liked it. It was one of those movies that I was hoping I'd love it, but I did like it. And critical as I am of movies, just for me to even say I liked it, that's saying something.
Well, that's part of your job, Bob.
That's right.
Well, I wanted to comment on this. People have asked me, why the big deal? Because I have friends that had never seen any of the Star Wars movies. In fact, I just loaned my Blu-ray copy to some friends so they could watch the original ones before they
watched
the new
seen
one.
The Star Wars movie. You know, when I went to Niagara Falls for the first time, we stayed with a family that hadn't visited the falls in 16 years, and they lived 10 minutes from the falls. This sounds like that.
I know. It's like people in San Diego that never go to Balboa Park, or people here in San Antonio that never go to the Alamo. When it's in your own backyard, sometimes you take it for granted.
That's right. Yeah.
But they were asked, they said, what's the big deal? Why was it so popular? And if we got a minute, I want to give you what my theory is. You know, growing up as a boomer and in the 60s, the 60s and early 70s were just a horrendous time. You know, we had Vietnam. We had assassinations of JFK and Bobby and Martin Luther King. We had the Watts riots, the Democratic Convention riots of 68. The Kent State shootings, the Altamont Rock Festival, and then you had pop stars like Brian Jones and Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin.
And you're forgetting the worst tragedy of all. Then we got into the 70s and had disco.
Disco, the death of rock and roll itself. So there was this cultural malaise, and we experienced this. I just think this our culture had a depression, and so the movies reflected that. We had movies like Cool Hand Luke, Sand Pebbles, Easy Rider, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Bonnie and Clyde, Godfather, Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, and almost every one of them, the hero gets killed in the movie.
Yeah, that's the point. And it was reflecting, whether you think art reflects culture or creates it, but the movies were just depressing.
You know, they were even doing that in television. I remember that. When Andy Griffith's show went off the air, CBS came back with a very short-lived vehicle for Andy Griffith called Headmaster, where he played the headmaster at a boarding school. And in the very first episode, it was about drugs.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. Here's Andy Griffith going, drugs are wrong. They're very, very wrong. Just didn't work.
I loved Andy. And for my money, when Don Knotts, Barney Fife, left that show, that was the end of that show for me. But so here, what happened, the movies were just depressing. Along comes Star Wars, and the good guy finally not only lives, but wins. And
it was the old-fashioned, like the old Saturday morning serials at the movie house.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. In fact, Lucas really, I read stuff about that. The last scene, the fighter scene, he took the script right out of Bridges of Toko Rhee. There were so many things he borrowed from Frank Herbert and doing it. I mean, he didn't really ever have an original thought, but he did a great job of collecting some and made a great film. But I think the phenomenon was people finally had something to feel good about.
And we had never seen a movie quite like it before, just
with the
rusty robots and the personalities in the robots.
Yeah, it was great stuff. So it just became a cultural phenomenon. And I remember going to one of those film cons, and this was in the 70s, and they showed a trailer for it. And I was with a friend, and I said, we better watch out for this because it's going to be gone in a week. Because sci-fi was not a marketable commodity at that time.
No, it was not. Now, I will give some kudos to Stanley Kubrick, though, because almost 10 years before Star Wars, he did 2001, and although you can't compare the stories, the special effects and the look on the spaceships, you watch 2001 today, it still holds up. It still holds up by today's standards.
There hadn't been anything from then until Star Wars, really. I mean, you know...
Planet of the Apes.
they were all pretty cheesy. So it kind of resurrected a genre. It gave people hope. And so that's kind of my theory on the thing. Absolutely,
and I love all the stuff about the Force and the dark side of the Force. And again, I've mentioned this before on the show. I go through this with my atheist friends because with all their talk about not believing in the supernatural, they are all so much into the supernatural movies. They love Star Wars. They love Star Trek. And I believe they're filling a void. Because they don't think those things are real, but they're looking for it in the fantasy.
And people who are not outspoken atheists but would never claim to be Christians are obsessed with paranormal things and supernatural. And, you know, they're bringing X-Files back, and everybody loves that stuff.
Of course they do. Plus the fight of good and evil. You have people, they go to college, they're taking all these classes on moral relativism. But that all goes out the window. When you're watching Lord of the Rings, you may not believe in the fantasy, but you're not going to get interested in a movie like that if you don't believe there's such a thing as good and evil.
Yeah, my next-door neighbor's an atheist. We've had many great conversations, and he said one time to me, well, I don't believe anything is absolute. I said, that statement is an absolute statement.
Exactly. The minute you say there's nothing absolute, you've just made an absolute statement.
And we had this big thing about nothing is evil, there's nothing right or wrong. And he wasn't being honest at that point because I said, so Hitler was okay and people that abuse children are okay. And he says, it's all just relative, it's all perspective. And then I saw a post on Facebook and he was all up in arms about something in South America, this particular community where every year they have a thing where they kill dogs and butcher them and sacrifice them and eat them. And he said, that's terrible, it's outrageous, it's a heinous crime. And I said, wait a minute. No, there's no wrong. There's no good or bad.
Exactly. Well, what's also interesting is you get these people to comment on religion, and sooner or later they'll talk about the hypocrisy of religion. And one of the questions I like to ask them is, are you morally outraged by the hypocrisy of organized religion? And they'll say, of course I am. And then I'll say, well, now how can that be if there's no such thing as morality and it's all relative? Then what exactly are you outraged about?
I think the real issue is people don't want anybody telling them that something they're doing is wrong.
Exactly. It's very selective. It's relative until it comes to us.
Which segues back to an earlier thing. I loved your opening thing about the president and his tears, but there was a statement in there I didn't agree with.
I got to ask you, did you buy his tears?
No, not at all. But the reporter, she said, nobody can cry on command. I beg your pardon. Leo DiCaprio is really good at it. Actors are great at it.
Yeah, of course they are.
And,
of course.
You know, and to suggest that a politician, much less a president, was disingenuous, oh my goodness, you're kidding.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so it's so suspicious when we look at the things that make him cry, and then we look at the plethora of things that don't make him cry. You just
I agreed with that whole premise, of course. But yeah, you know, those guys are pros, and even the I really loved Ronald Reagan, but he was an actor. That's why he was so good with the media.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And probably a lot of people voted for Ronald Reagan for the wrong reasons. I think the right reasons were just he did make a good president, but probably a lot of people did follow him because of his charisma. It's like what we're seeing now with Trump and Obama, and I like Trump better than Obama, but I'm bothered that people follow Trump for the same reasons that they were following Obama.
I'm amazed that so many of my Christian and conservative friends have just jumped on this guy's bandwagon. I'm thinking, what is there about him that holds to any of the stuff you've espoused up until now? Yeah. You know, but anyway, that's another show.
I'm sure there'll be a Trump show or two between now and the next year.
I'd love to be in on that one.
Oh, you bet. You bet. So I think you were about to say something else regarding the Obama and the gun control thing, and I kind of jumped in and asked you how you felt about the tears.
I didn't buy it, and I think he has an agenda, and it was an opportunity for him. And I will say this, you know, the last time I was on your show, we talked about, you know, me being a pacifist and a conscious objector. But I will tell you, and I just was talking with friends, my son-in-law works in a gun shop. He's a former Marine. And I'm thinking, I may go buy a gun while it's still legal just on the,
just out of
principle that it's the Second Amendment. It's my right, by golly.
Yeah, I gotta say, Jim, you know, as pacifists go, I just don't think the Amish and Quaker are knocking on your door to bring you in.
Last time we talked,
you didn't sound that much like a pacifist when we were done.
Well, no, when I explained my position, I was on a missions trip once with a bunch of teenagers, and one of them just kept irritating me. I said, you know, I'm a pacifist, but I'm the most violent pacifist in me. He said, what does that mean? I said, I'll beat you within an inch of your life. I can't kill you, but I'll make you wish I did.
Well, you know the loophole for the pacifist. When they ask you to turn the other cheek, you just say, hey, buddy, after two, I run out of cheeks.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Christmas is right around the corner, and Bob Siegel's new novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is available. What better gift can parents or grandparents offer to their children than a story which promotes Judeo-Christian values? But don't look for anybody standing on a soapbox. Instead, the message is presented through an exciting, humorous, entertaining fantasy adventure with a talking cat and a magic ornament that grants wishes, but only at the expense of causing a lot of trouble. By the way, adults have loved this book as much as kids, so it will actually make a great Christmas gift for anyone you know. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
We've been talking a little bit about the arts today. Jim Barrier, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob. Did I hear some Man from La Mancha music there a little while ago?
Let's see. We have Man from Dream. We have Man of La Mancha coming up, but what you heard was Cats, and then you heard just now you heard Burt Bacharach with Do You Know the Way to San Jose. So it's very eclectic. It's very wide variety of pieces.
And I want to try to help you as time goes on. If I'm a reoccurring guest host here from time to time, I have a strong suit in the rock and roll area. You are really have a wide envelope, and especially with films and stuff. But anytime that you need a little help on the rock and roll thing, I'd love
feel free to submit. In fact, every year or so, I like to get a new set of bumper music together and rotate it in with the others. Hey, by the way, we were talking about science. We had briefly hit on Planet of the Apes, and during the break, Nick and I were talking a little bit about the Planet of the Apes franchise, and it reminded me, did you ever watch the program The Hollywood Squares?
Oh, yeah.
Remember when Paul Lynde used to have the center square?
Yeah, he was so funny.
Oh, I remember when the movie Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which was the fifth in the series, came out, and Peter Marshall, the host, says, Paul, first there was Planet of the Apes, then there was Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, and Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. Now, at last, we come to the final saga. What is this one called? And Paul Lynde goes, sick at the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, he was really my favorite on that show.
Oh, my gosh, he was hilarious. Yeah. All right, so what other things are on your radar today, my friend?
Well, if we're on a theme here of entertainment and movies and stuff, I also have found it fascinating that in history, there's always time for entertainment. If you back into the Depression and World War II, people could still come up with enough change to go to the show. And so we had the golden age of Hollywood with movies like Mutiny on the Bounty, Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, Kane, Casablanca. You had the music scene, you had big band and jazz music really hitting the time, swing music, country music started with Jimmie Rodgers and Hank Williams, and Roy Acuff, guys like that. Baseball, you had Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio. And so people always found a nickel or quarter or whatever the cost of a ticket was. They could always go get entertained, even in the worst of times. And look at it now. I mean, Force Awakens did $700 million in 16 weeks.
Yeah, isn't it incredible?
And so I'm wondering, is this have something to do with just our need to escape from the harsh realities of life and get away for a couple hours and be entertained by something, so we don't have to deal with the realities out there in the newsreels? Of course, in those days, the government would do their little promos during the film to get their propaganda out. But there just seems to be an interesting thing that we love entertainment no matter how bad things are.
Well, yeah, I think entertainment is very important. And as I think you know, one of my degrees is actually in theater arts. I take the arts very seriously, and partly because we do need to escape from life and be entertained, as you're suggesting. But also, I think really good art will make a statement about human life and a statement about something that's true. A good comedy is funny because it's familiar. We see ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that art should either entertain or have a message. When it does both, when there's movies, and I love musicals. That's one of my weaknesses. The Sound of Music, Fiddler on the Roof, which are extremely entertaining, but extremely important messages in them as well. That's where they really hit it, when you're both entertained and challenged at the same time.
Yeah, and it does. It'll reflect things. It'll talk about values, and also it's sometimes a great way to disguise a message and not get censored. You know, Rod Serling did this with
Twilight Zone. I was just going to say that Twilight Zone.
He talked about really hot issues, but because he couched it in phrases and characters that weren't real, they couldn't go after him.
He could get away with it.
Roddenberry did that.
He was talking about the Vietnam War and Star Trek all over the place, but at a time when you really couldn't do that. Then that changed with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, and they started speaking against it more openly.
Yeah, and they got censored a bit.
They finally went off the air because they slipped an episode past the censors. Yep.
And I watched their show every week because I thought they were funny. And they all.
Oh, I love the Smothers Brothers. They're my favorite. They came to the Wild Animal Park a few years ago, and I got to go see them many years ago by now, actually.
Oh, man.
I love them. Very,
yeah,
very entertaining.
That was great stuff. But yeah, the whole the social comment that you find in film and good books, TV shows sometimes, and again, even in music, it's an expression that people can deal with the issues. I have this great appreciation for any artist, whether they do music or a playwright or a painter or a sculptor. And even if they don't profess to be believers in anything, I try to address and tell them, you know, the reason you're like this is because you have a genetic that comes from the greatest artist ever. And I think the creativity that we have, that we express through all these different fields, I believe that it comes from being created in the image of God. And I think he's pleased with an awful lot of the stuff that some of the very religious Pharisees would turn their nose up at. I said that this morning to my congregation. You know, I can worship God at a concert or a movie house because I'm appreciating the incredible imagination, the things that he has put in people and the way they express the beauty in life or the pain in life. So that may be way out there for some people, but I appreciate the arts, whether the person wants to, you know, thank his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ when he gets an award or not, you know.
Exactly. And when you get back to the idea of us being made in the image of God, of course, that doesn't mean physical image. It doesn't mean that human beings look like God. Nobody knows what God looks like.
Right.
But it does mean spiritual image, and that means that like God, we have a desire to create.
Yeah.
And whether it's creating in the arts or creating a computer program or designing a building and being an architect, or of course, then there's the love and the procreation too. But we, like God, we have a need to create.
I believe that completely. And so I encourage that in people and I commend them. And I don't have to use religious terms, but I've done that at times with people. I have a lot of friends that are artists and musicians, a lot right there in the San Diego area. And I express appreciation to them and say, you know, when I see that in you, when you do that, it really reminds me of the God that I worship. And it just makes me appreciate you even more. And sometimes you really turn some heads when you say something like that to somebody who's not a professing believer. But it really is my view, and I really, really do wholeheartedly embrace that view.
Now, I'm going to guess then, because we're good friends, but we don't see each other that much. I'm going to guess that you might not have the problem with R-rated movies that some Christians have. I'll give you some chance to think about that while we listen to the real Man of La Mancha.
Okay.
This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Okay, we got to continue with the Jim Barrier guessing game. Who's this group, Jim?
Moody Blues.
Yeah, you got it. All right. I wanted to give you a chance to make up for some of those
Thanks.
Man
well,
of La Mancha.
I missed the Lawrence of Arabia. Well, I could have swore I heard The Impossible Dream. I thought that was from Man from La Mancha, but that's okay.
But
that's all right. No, but like I said, my strong suit is on the rock and roll stuff. My friends and family call me. Instead of using Shazam or looking something up on the internet, they'll call me and say, who's saying blah, 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 blah?
Well, that's true.
I just want to see if I know it.
We nailed the rock and roll ones more than you've nailed the movie themes, so
yeah,
I see that.
Movies
yeah.
is your strong suit. Between the two of us, though, as a line from Ben-Hur, we make a considerable
we make a considerable man, yeah. That is, Ben-Hur, by the way, is on my top 10 list as one of the best movies ever made. And it's not because it's a Christian film, because most Christian films I don't think are very good, actually.
Yeah.
But Ben-Hur was just phenomenal. Oh. Very first movie to win 11 Academy Awards.
Yeah, and it's still tied for the lead, I think.
Lord of the Rings, the third one, Return of the King, and Titanic.
Titanic, yeah.
I don't think Titanic deserved 11 Academy Awards.
It was an okay
movie, but it did not deserve 11 Academy Awards. So.
Yeah, it was a great boat crash with a love story in it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Ben-Hur, still one of my favorites, and the unedited version, of course.
Oh, yeah. We had the opportunity to meet Charlton Heston here in San Diego. They have the AMC 20 Theater.
Yeah.
When they premiered it, they showed a Charlton Heston movie on each screen. Planet of the Apes was one of them, in fact. But also
that?
Ten Commandments, Ben-Hur, some others. I think The Omega Man was one of them. Maybe Soylent Green. I went to Ben-Hur, and he was signing his book. I got to see him. He was in his 70s. He looked great.
Yeah.
And I got to compliment him because he was one of the few people in Hollywood at that time that was willing to speak out on conservative issues.
Yeah, well, and I think he was the head of NRA for a while, wasn't he?
He was. I think he was the head of the NRA. I believe that is true.
Yeah.
He also used to, in the 60s, he used to speak out against racism before it became fashionable.
That's right, yeah. And, I loved him. By the way, we're doing trivia stuff here. He was also in a film I really liked called Tombstone.
Briefly.
He played Henry Hooker, the rancher, that put up Doc Holliday while he was six.
Since we're being so tangential, and since you brought up Tombstone, I want to point out that Wyatt Earp came out at the same time as Tombstone. Most people liked Tombstone better. How would you compare those two movies?
Well, I liked Tombstone better myself, and some of it is, and I love Kevin Costner, but doggone it, he's just the same guy in every stinking film. And for me, Val Kilmer totally made Tombstone. It's just a shame that he didn't at least get nominated for an award.
Yeah, he was great as Doc Holliday. I also thought Dennis Quaid played a good Doc Holliday.
He did.
To me, it was kind of unfair that people compared the films because one was an epic and was the story of the life of Wyatt Earp. If you compare the Tombstone sequences, the gunfight at OK Corral, I do think Tombstone was better. Tombstone had familiar villains. We were getting to know those villains. We were getting to hate those villains. You need that with villains. In Wyatt Earp, they were covering so many years, the villains kept changing.
Yeah.
And they were bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, had to get off on that tangent.
I love Tombstone, and it had some of the greatest lines. Let me give you my favorite line from Tombstone.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with a huckleberry. My favorite line, Wyatt's talking to the Billy Bob Thornton character, and he says, you go awful brash for a man who don't go heels. And Wyatt says, don't need to go heels to get the bulge on a dub like you. What the heck is that?
There were so many great ones. There was the guy when the guy turns to Doc Holliday and says, you're so drunk, you're probably seeing double. He says, I got two guns,
one for each of you.
You see how we're celebrating Obama's gun control today on our program?
You're nothing if not consistent.
My other favorite line was very early in the movie where the guy was trying to talk Wyatt Earp into being the marshal again. And, of course, he wanted to go into the casino and make money. He says, I know a lot of people that are rich, and they have a guilty conscience. Wyatt Earp says, I already have a guilty conscience. I might as well have the money, too.
That's right. Perfect. Yeah, it was. And then that's writing. I was talking with friends. Writing makes such a great difference, whether it's movies or TV show or just books. By the way, I love your book, but Christmas is not around the corner anymore.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, those we're going to replace those commercials soon. We're a little bit behind. I do want to point out that you can read The Dangerous Christmas Ornament even when it isn't Christmas time. I should tell you, my newest novel just got published. It's already on Kindle, and it'll be in print copy in about a week, and it's called Push the Winds Around. It's a science fiction story.
We will
soon replace The Dangerous Christmas Ornaments with Push the Winds Around.
Well, and you know, I wrote a review on Amazon for Christmas Ornament, and I said it isn't just for Christmas.
That's right.
It's a book that's relevant year-round. So
right. So now you're coming on my show telling us to get rid of the commercials because Christmas is over. What's the deal here?
Where's the consistency here, Jim? I'm saying update.
Okay, you're right. Okay. No, we do. Okay, we will be replacing those with Push the Winds. Well, once I get a few people to go and write a review for Push the Winds Around, we'll put them and immortalize them in our commercials a little bit. Yeah.
I'll have to read it first. I'm a big believer in not writing reviews until I've
well, that's good. I wouldn't want you to read it.
Okay.
Read it. It's very different, I should tell you. Dangerous Christmas Ornament was for kids. Now, this one actually has kids in it. They're very central to the book, but it's kids seen through the eyes of adults.
Ornament was
adults seen through the eyes of kids, so very different. I'll be curious to see your reaction to it. Push the Winds Around.
Well, the Chronicles of Narnia were for kids, but they're great for adults, too. So.
Yeah, well, the premise in Push the Winds Around is an interesting one. It's a psychologist who gets the psychologist's dream of traveling back through time.
Oh boy.
And his mission is to influence the life of a convicted murderer when he was 6 years old. And he's just convinced that if he could meet him as a young child, he'll change his destiny. And that's
the
premise.
You've already got me hooked.
And of course, it gets complicated because he falls in love with the kid's mother in the past and all kinds of things. So
I love time travel stories, but, you know, I don't think it works. There's always a loophole. You know, there's always something, wait a minute, if this guy came back and he became his own grandfather, how does that work?
You know? There are paradoxes, but time, you know, the only branch of science that's ever interested me a whole lot has been the whole thing with quantum physics. They have actually proven Einstein's theories that one can travel into the future. They've proven that with atomic clocks, and there are theories now about traveling into the past. However, none of the movies we've seen, and I'd have to include my own story here, have been consistent. I think that's because to make good drama, you can't have the consistency. But if there were such a thing as traveling into the past, you'd never be able to change the past. You would perhaps become part of what was just always meant to be in the past. All right, hold with me, my friend. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. Look, I admit it, I'm not tech savvy at all, but at least I'm savvy enough to know how to keep technology working for me. Even as a writer and radio talk show host, two careers far more related to the arts and the sciences, I am on my computer all day long. That means I need a computer that behaves itself. So when I do encounter problems, I call BitLogic. BitLogic can repair your personal computer. They also offer IT consulting for your small business. Is your computer doing something weird that you couldn't even begin to describe, let alone fix? Or maybe you're looking ahead, wanting to keep your small business systems running smoothly. BitLogic can help. Find them online at bitlogicit.com or call them at 619-333-6873. That's bitlogicit.com or 619-333-6873. Right now, mention the Bob Siegel Show and receive a 10% discount off any service. Got complex problems? BitLogic has simple solutions. How's that for making the obvious obvious?
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. You're listening to mostly a pop culture edition this week, although we did start it off with politics early in the show. So if you came in late and you want to hear some of my latest political commentary, go ahead and get it off my website and listen a little earlier in the show. But I'm delighted to talk about some of our favorite movies and a friend who takes the arts just as seriously. And a pastor, Pastor Jim Barrier. You know, we managed to leapfrog over my question that I gave you two breaks ago. What is your opinion of R-rated movies? I know some Christians won't go to them. I don't have a problem with them myself. I mean, I wouldn't make that as a blanket statement. I would certainly have a problem with some of them. But what's your take on this?
You know what? There's no blanket statement. I have seen, I'm sure, a great many R-rated films. And so I don't judge it on that. Now, I will say this. I'm going to qualify it. Boy, when the Game of Thrones thing came out, and I know it was made for HBO or TV or something, but and so many people were telling me, oh, this is great. You got to see it. And my wife and I got through about 15 or 20 minutes. And for me, I have a problem with so much graphic sexual stuff. And it's a personal thing. I don't need those images in my head.
You know, it's funny because a friend wanted to hook me on Game of Thrones, and he found on the internet a version that had the nudity removed. It was the first time I ever heard of a black market censored version rather than a black market uncensored version of something.
Must have been pretty short.
I don't know. But yeah, and it is gratuitous sometimes.
Yeah.
My standard would be the motive of the director. Like, if somebody's putting scenes like that in just to make it hard porn, that's a problem. If they have a story to tell and they feel that's essential to the story, and I may not always agree that it's essential to the story, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, then, you know, I have different standards. If something's made by somebody that's not a Christian, I'm going to expect it to have swearing. It might have some nudity. I just want to make sure that that's not the whole message. Now, I remember when the movie Eyes Wide Shut came out. It was the last movie that Kubrick made.
Yeah,
There was a lot of sex in the movie, which I don't think they needed. However, in this case, it was a big part of the story. And what was interesting, it was Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Right. Uh-huh.
They were going off on, they were exploring sexual fantasies. And at the end of the movie, they came to hate it and detest it. Yeah, you found it disgusting, and it ended up being one of the greatest movies on monogamy and pro-marriage movies. And what was sad was that a lot of people in the church would never view it that way because the moment they heard about the nudity, they would never even take the time to see it. So I do think there are times when we shortchange ourselves a little bit as Christians, but we all have different thresholds. And if somebody's going to go see a movie like that and it is going to put images in their head and cause them to sin, then they would be better off just not seeing it.
And honestly, I did not watch that film because I'd heard enough about it, read enough, where I thought, I don't need that personally. But I have Christian friends that would have no problem with that. And I have a good friend. He's an artist that lives there in San Diego, and he's an insanely creative artist. And he does a lot of nudes. And he's just such a good painter and such a good artist, you know. And I don't have a problem with that, you know, because I know it's the way he's doing stuff. But some of the stuff in the movies, it really gets into things that cross a line for me. I also, and this is just because I'm such a lightweight, I have a hard time with really, really graphic violence. I loved the movie Saving Private Ryan, but that first 20 minutes. I had nightmares for days. It was just so disturbing for me personally.
Yeah, and I would rather see well-drawn characters than a lot of violence. I mean, they got a lot of kudos because it was such a realistic depiction of the battlefield.
And there was a purpose for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, it's like I can only take so much of that kind of stuff. So I don't like slasher flicks and stuff like that so much, just because it doesn't do anything positive for me. But I can handle an R-rated movie. I can handle movies that have some nudity or that have love scenes or anything. But it's like you said, is it just gratuitous, or is it something that contributes to the storyline and has a point? And so I'm fine with all of that. And of course, I probably get a little flack from some of my Christian friends and pastor friends, to each his own, they say.
Yeah, and I'm somewhere in between. Like, again, getting back to Eyes Wide Shut, I think Kubrick could have made that same movie with that same message and the same theme and not even put any nudity in it. However, he felt it was important, and in his case, given his track record for making films, I believe he was at least sincere. Maybe sincerely mistaken.
Yeah. No.
But since,
didn't he do Clockwork Orange?
He did Clockwork Orange. Oh, you talk about some violence. And yet Clockwork Orange had an incredibly important message to it and was based on
that
a classic sci-fi novel. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So that's not surprising for me. It's like Quentin Tarantino. I think Quentin Tarantino is just, on a certain level, really a genius at filmmaking. But he's a very twisted genius.
Yeah, well, I admire him as a film director. When he opens his big stupid mouth and gives social commentary on cops, that's when I'm going, Quentin, just make the movies. That's what you do best.
That's one more thing. As long as we're on the arts tonight, people say, so many of the rock stars that I like and actors and actresses that I like are so ultra-liberal, and I disagree with almost everything that they espouse. But I appreciate their work in the arts. And someone said, why is it that so many of the Hollywood types and the rock people they're all so liberal? And this is my theory, but I think it's because the people that are really on the creative edge don't like being told you have to color between the lines. They don't want anybody squelching their creativity, so that involves any kind of moral views or things that say, this is wrong, this is right. They can't tolerate that. Because it hinders their creativity, at least in their own mind, they think it does. What do you think about that?
I think that there's a lot of credence to that. I have another theory that I wouldn't offer as an alternative, but maybe something to put alongside it. These are people that are very successful in their lives, and they work hard, and they deserve every penny, but you know, they're having great lives, and they're living in mansions, and they're movie stars, and I think a lot of them get pangs of conscience, and they say, I want to give back, I want to contribute something. I think the films they're making might be contribution enough, but if they're not thinking of it that way, there's only so many hours in the day. I mean, you take that skill set that they put into making their movies, if you applied that same skill set into studying the issues a little better, thinking outside of the box and not just going along with the pack and being politically correct, I think that same creativity would cause them to come up with more original opinion. But I think, you know, like I know people that they're so busy in their jobs, they don't have time to follow the news. And I get that. I have to follow the news because of what I do. The only thing I would say to somebody is, hey, if you don't have time to follow the news because you're making movies or you're teaching at schools or you're working as a doctor, that's great. The only thing I would ask you is if you're not following the news, do us a favor. Don't vote. Don't vote because it's not an informed opinion. And that's my take on Hollywood. I think they want to give back, but they're putting up so much time to do their craft and doing it very well that they're just not taking the time to study the issue. So the easy thing to do is to just go ahead and espouse what all their friends are saying or what they're hearing on PBS.
Yeah. I'm sure there's lots of that. And there are some good people out there. Gary Sinise, I love his work. And he stays pretty conservative on a lot of his stuff. And there's a few of them out there, you know.
There are, and a few. There were some brave ones like Charlton Heston, and a few brave ones today.
Yeah.
Kelsey Grammer's more conservative. Well, my friend, we are out of time. We've covered
just
the gamut from Obama to Hollywood. We've done the distance. And we throw in a little bit about God and being made in the image of God, everything but the kitchen sink.
Well, I look forward to the next visit.
It's always a pleasure. We'll have you on really soon again. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks.
Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.